Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, this is George, and you're listening to episode number 22 of the Zum Podcast. I'm going to be talking today to Calvin Johnson, famously of Beat Happening, K Records, Indie Rock Royalty, first generation indie rock people. If you ever read the Michael Azarod book, Our Band Could Be Your Life, final chapter is all about Beat Happening and the formation of K Records. And Calvin's been in a bunch of other projects: Go Team, Dub Narcotic, Halo Benders, Hive Dwellers, solo performer. We ended up hanging out a lot this last week I think it gets explained in the interview a little bit why we were hanging out so much, and also there was some technical weirdness and I had to kind of cobble together an ending to the show, which I think is working and works in the spirit. Before I get too deep into the show, I wanted to announce some tour dates that I'm doing. First time for me doing comedy in Austin, Texas. I'm going to be in Austin for a couple days. First show I have booked is a combination music comedy show my friend Kristen put together at a venue called The Owl, Friday, October 18th. And it's going to be hosted by Jennifer Moore from Deep Time. A bunch of music people trying their hand at comedy for the first time, like Dustin Pilkington, from the bands Total Abuse and Best Ones, Alicia Fine, Matt Needles. There's going to be music by Patrick Healy and Rue. So that's Friday the 18th at the Owl, Saturday, October 19th. Duncan Carson and Brendan O'Grady were kind enough to put me on their show called Sure Thing at Austin Java, which is a free show at 8, and that's Saturday, October 19th. And I'm going to try and get on some mics and get on the Sunday Showcase. We'll see. If you're in Austin, get at me, and I'm going to have some free daytimes to hang out with people, maybe do some interviews. I've kind of been reaching out in my brain about who to talk to in Austin. There's a couple possible people. I also wanted to point out a show that is real special and weird. It's going to be October 26th in Mendocino at this farm called the Oz Farm. Guy named Elliot Armstrong put together this overnight camping, food, comedy, extravaganza, overnight October 26th through 27th at the Mendocino Oz Farm, and it's going to be, the comedians on it are going to be Caitlin Gill, Lydia Popovich, Jesse Elias, Land Smith, Andrew Holmgren, Claire O'Kane, and little old me. And it's a little pricey, but not when you think about the fact that you're camping, getting fed really well, and get to hang out overnight in the woods and listen to people, hopefully, you know, making you laugh, making you chuckle in the woods. So that's October 26th. I'll put a link in the notes because I just need an Eventbrite link or a brown paper tickets link. But yeah, it's called Funny Farm, organized by Elliot Armstrong. So that's October 26th. If you have a hankering to go camp on a farm, eat amazing food. It's also where my friends Chris and Maggie got married. Speaking of weddings, that's kind of the context in which I ended up hanging out with Calvin for a couple days. I was officiating a wedding. He was the wedding performer. We ended up hanging out where, like, we didn't know the family, really, so it was mostly him and me talking about stuff. So that's what led to us doing this interview in a car. I'm driving him to the city after a show in Oakland. So here's me talking to Calvin.
Me, you can breed me, you can need me, you can read me, or Dutch treat me even better. Make a movie, better, mail a letter, you're so groovy, misbehaving, sock it to me, double dating, overstay and always waiting. You can break me, you can rape me, you can trade me, you can save me, overrate me, celebrating a new Satan, all the trimmings, extra sinning, total fitness, keep on walking, need a witness, keep on talking,
skin is feeling, getting rotten, got a feeling you really. We're driving back to the city.
I'm going to San Francisco.
One of my doors is not open. What if it's your door?
No, it's not closed. It's
me. Not closed, rather. Yeah, let me try this. Yeah, it's me. All right.
There you go.
So, that's what happens when you multitask and try to record a podcast and drive and eat a pear all at the same time. So, I'm in the car with Calvin Johnson.
And I'm eating a pear.
Calvin's eating a pear. This is like our third day of driving around in my car together. Is what I realized.
It's just like being on tour.
It is kind of like you're on a Bay Area tour. So, contextually, I would explain that our my friend, now your friend, but previously an acquaintance, asked Calvin to sing at the wedding, and I got to officiate the wedding, my first time officiating a wedding.
Yep.
And how'd you feel about that?
It was enjoyable.
Yeah.
Thoroughly enjoyable. A lot of family around. I mean, their family, the bride and groom's family. A lot of their friends. That was neat.
I just thought of something that someone told me one time, which is that actually this is how you should do an interview, is not looking at each other.
Okay.
For radio. Like,
all right.
Pretend you're in a car. They're like, pretend you're, like, sit side by side and pretend you're in a car. And I'm going complete method all the way.
Yeah.
So method of,
I hear
like,
you.
Actually just doing that.
I'm following your lead.
Yeah. and then we had the weird incident, which, that was...
Well, we did, like, some comedy nights. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, that's the first time you've ever done anything like that, right?
Well, more or less.
More or less.
I mean, I didn't really do anything that different than what I do at a show,
true.
Pretty much.
But putting it in that
Although at the
context.
Show, the show tonight, I didn't do a lot of talking.
That's
cause
true.
Because we didn't have time. I realized there was no time because we had to go to Frisco so you can get to your new comedy. You have another comedy show tonight.
Yes, I do.
So there's some scheduling conflicts.
And you were at the other thing that I did at Northern, and which...
That was fun.
That was fun. So I feel like there's a lot of pragmatic, kind of methodological things that carry over from the DIY world into the comedy world. And I think that's a vibe I like about it. You're afraid of flying, or
no,
you're
not
afraid?
At all.
You prefer not to.
I prefer not to have to take my shoes off, unless I want to. Like on the train, I can take my shoes off if I want to.
Mm-hmm.
Can't walk around without your shoes, but you can relax. It's very serene.
Amtrak?
Travel. Amtrak, yes.
Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to do that Pacific Starlight.
Oh, yeah. Pacific.
Right.
Coast Starlight. That's the West Coast train that goes from Seattle down to Los Angeles.
Yeah. I like the idea of, like, being able to, like, nap and zone out and do it. And it costs about as much as a flight.
It's probably, like, the same. It's definitely cheaper than driving.
And do you drive?
I have, I don't own any sort of automobile,
but I do
have a driver's license.
Yeah, you'll drive on tour?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A couple years ago, didn't you on tour with Dub Narcotic get in like a pretty rough van accident? Was it like a
black
ice situation?
That was exactly... What's the date?
Today is October 5th.
Okay, because it was October... It was like October 13th or... October 15th, 2003.
Oh, wow.
So it was almost
10 years ago.
Yeah, it's like 10-year anniversary.
So it sounds like it was pretty traumatic.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't any fun.
Where were you when that happened?
That was in far eastern Montana.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Close to the state line with North Dakota. Yeah.
And what, you like hit a deer or something? Or?
Well, I don't know. I was sleeping.
Oh, you weren't awake when it happened?
No.
Yeah.
But Chris Sutton was driving, and he says there was some sort of animal that he swerved out of the way and went off the road, and the van, you know, rolled over, and it just was, it was not, things, the van was destroyed, and the people were
You did not wake up when it happened?
I became conscious several days later.
Oh my God. So you were
I was
like
in the hospital for...
Was it like a coma?
Well, no, but I was just in the hospital for a week.
But you're conscious.
I think that I may have come to, but I don't know. I was not really.
Didn't check a calendar or anything, yeah.
I think I was a bit delirious. I was a bit out of it. According to what I'm told. I don't remember anything until about three days later.
3 days later. Wow, so you just... That's kind of a lost chunk of time in your brain. Mm-hmm. And everyone else was in a similar condition?
Well, I was the only one I was the only one that was in the hospital that long. Chris... He broke his knee, I think, and his jaw was broken.
Yeah, because he still has knee problems, right? I think. Yeah, I remember seeing him.
His jaw was all wired shut for a while, and Heather was thrown out of the car.
Oh my God!
She had
out a window.
Yeah. So, but she didn't have any like broken bones, but she had some back problems.
Oh,
I had a concussion. That was the one with the concussion.
So 3 days out and a concussion. Wow.
Yeah, and some broken ribs and a bunch of other stuff, but separated shoulders, and it wasn't a lot of fun.
You get physical therapy or anything?
Yeah, I've been to do physical therapy for a while, and all that, but.
Yeah, I just remember hearing a little bit about that, and you were out of commission for a while after that. Right?
Yeah. Couldn't quite. I had a bad stutter for about a year after that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. And so that's just a sort of something, some kind of head wound thing where you get a stutter.
Yeah.
Because of that. That's crazy. And eventually it went away, or you had to go to speech therapy or something?
Well, it just it went away. It comes back once in a while, but mostly it's gone. The thing that was, I started playing shows in February.
February after an October accident.
Yeah, and that's because when in like a month after the accident, some people in England were like, "Hey, we're doing this festival." Well, not festival. It was really like a arts. Uh-huh. It was at the Museum of Modern Art at Oxford University. They were like, "We're doing a creative thing, and we want to have you come and play." And I figured, oh, by then I'll be fine.
Right.
But I didn't realize I wasn't going to be fine.
And you flew.
So I said I would do that, when I got closer, I realized I wasn't really ready to play shows. But fortunately, the shows were all in England, so it didn't really matter. But what's interesting about it is that your brain is a mystery, and the singing part comes from a different section of your brain from your talking. So even though I'm having these problems speaking, mm-hmm. I could sing fine. So I would sing just perfectly naturally, but then when I would talk to the audience, the stutter would come back. But I also had to relearn my songs because I couldn't remember a lot of the words and stuff. So that was. But it all worked out. I think it was a good thing that I played those shows so soon because it really got me going.
And then, yeah, that would definitely, I mean, just having a physical injury, I had to really refigure out my life for like a couple months.
Oh, yeah.
Who was helping you out with all this stuff, like recovery stuff?
Well, I had health insurance, and I went to the physical therapist and all that through my insurance. But,
like support network of people.
Well, yeah, my mother, mm-hmm. And Lois,
yeah,
and my sisters, my brother, my whole family—they were just great, you know. And then people at K were very supportive, very helpful, you know, because I could barely walk, but I was like, I'm gonna go back to work. So I would be like, I could barely move, and they're just like, you know, everyone was very patient. They were very patient. It was nice.
Oh man, I will say, like. I'm just from my personal experience of having a broken leg and then just trying to get back into doing mics and doing comedy, like, as soon as I could, because that's the only thing I could focus on to motivate myself to get better.
Yeah.
And having that is great, but then the frustration when you, and imagine, like, yeah, like, having to deal with the stutter that you never had before and not be able to get your thoughts across as coherently as they are, and they're probably told everything's going according to normal in your head, right? Like, like, oh, I know what I'm saying, and then you just, there's a
it just doesn't quite happen. Yeah, it's, and then that's the same thing with, I couldn't really walk for a while. I mean, I could walk, but it was very slow.
But no, and broken leg?
Well, I had a broken ribs, but all of my injuries, with separated shoulder and the broken ribs and the concussion, there's no treatment for any of those injuries.
Yeah, ribs.
The only treatment is you wait for it to get better.
Yeah, ribs.
And
that
so with a concussion, it's just, they just wait for you to get better. And so it's just waiting around. Yeah, the ribs was pretty painful. I had some, what do you call it, abrasions. Some, like, I have some strange scars that were from that as well.
Really? Like, kind of like internal cracks?
Just, well, just like,
things?
You know, I just got cut from, you know, the, oh. I was, the car rolled over a couple times, so I don't know what happened.
And there's
somewhere,
gear and stuff too, right?
There's stuff in there, yeah. The whole thing was
that's
crazy.
Brutal.
But see, Heather and I were both sleeping on the bench seats in the back, so we were both completely out of it when it happened.
Oh, man.
I really like that old bridge over there.
Oh, yeah, we're seeing the old bridge, and we're on the new bridge. It's so weird how, when it's completely dark like that, it does feel a little bit creepy.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it looks, I guess, old. I never get to see it. I never used to get to see it because I was on it.
Uh-huh.
It's like being inside the bloodstream. What else do I want to ask? So, yeah, you had a good time with the comedy stuff.
Yeah,
you enjoyed being
we
part of the sketch?
Time. That was fun. Well, the sketch, I don't know where the sketch came from. It seems like you guys already had it when I got there.
We had an outline.
And I felt like there were things that happened. I wish we had just a few more practices, because there were things that, because it was all improv based on this outline.
Yes, that was,
which is great.
Yeah.
But there were things that happened.
There were a couple of jokes that were in there. Yeah.
Yeah. And but some things happened in the various rehearsals that I think were worth keeping, and it would have been nice to have one or two more rehearsals to be able to say, hey, what about that thing where you did this? We should try to do that. Or, I like how you did that, so I'm going to try doing this. Or whatever, you know.
Yeah, no.
I think it could have been, we could have worked it out a little bit more. It would have been a little bit more solid.
Well, I wanted to
but
say,
it worked out fine.
I wanted to say, like, you were giving, it was like a writer's room. Like, you were giving, like, us, like, pointers, structural tips, and, like, almost like tags for the jokes. And, yeah, it was fun. It was like, oh, we're kind of all writing this sketch together by improvising and riffing it.
Mm.
And, like, you were part of the riffing.
That was fun.
So, yeah. The first time being in a sketch. Actually,
well, you know,
me,
I've been,
in a sketch.
I've been, I used to do a theater group with Jason Traeger.
Yeah, oh, really?
We were called the South Capital Players.
When was this?
Back in the 90s.
Okay.
And Lois was in there, and a few other people, Star Seifert. And we only did a few performances, a few productions, but it was pretty fun.
You write something yourself, or you guys would do, like,
I didn't do it. Usually Lois or someone else wrote the things, and then we did one, it was like a theatrical production of the film Valley Girl.
Valley Girl, yeah.
Yeah.
And,
Nick
Cage, yeah.
And, so that was fun. And, we did a bunch of stuff. It was pretty fun. They did some stuff without me, too. They did a great, I forget what it was called.
But, so, yeah, that's interesting. Traeger has sort of been writing a lot of these lines. He's sort of, like, in a lot of different Venn diagrams, that guy.
Mm.
But existing as, like, someone from sort of the DIY punk world and the comedy world and art world, legit, like, art, like,
yeah.
He has, like, an MFA or something, right?
Something like that. Something. I'm not sure what he has.
So you have, you're not a complete stranger to the format.
Well, when I was in high school, I watched Saturday Night Live from the very first season.
Oh, yeah. First season.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's, I was going to say, your songs have humor in them often. Particularly that one, the acapella song.
Oh, Get In.
Get In. It's got a lot of humor.
Well, thank you.
In it. And I feel like you have a sense of humor that is, in like on a one-on-one basis, it's like kind of interesting because it feels like you're feeling things out with people, and almost like you're testing them a little bit.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't know what you think, if that's how it comes across, but I've noticed it a little bit. But it's also just like, it seems like you're kind of like, I'm entertaining myself a little bit by talking to you.
Hmm.
I don't know. Have you thought about that ever?
You're entertaining yourself right now by talking to me?
Or no. I mean, yeah, I mean, I am. I mean, are you entertaining yourself?
Well, I'm hoping you're having a good time doing this. I hope this isn't a waste of your time.
No, I'm having a good time.
Good, good.
No, I mean, I'm not saying, I'm not critiquing. I'm just saying I've noticed I feel like this is the most amount of time we've ever spent together.
I'm having a great time.
Yeah. And you know, we were having some real talk. It seems good. You really like Chris Garcia's story the other day.
Well, he had a few different pieces that, did he have a little longer time than everyone else?
Yeah, he did.
Because
he's also kind of a senior. He's like the senior and we're like the freshman kind of.
But he went early.
Yeah, he did. Because he must have just been like, I want to go early. And she was just like, yeah, sure, go.
Well, he was entertaining. Everybody definitely had their points. Everyone had their period of warming up.
It took
everyone a minute or two to kind of get into the groove, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really an enjoyable experience to be in the audience and hear all these different perspectives. And then going over to that show last night, we're at the
Talkies. Yeah.
The After Talkie. What was the other one?
Oh, yeah. Hand to Mouth.
Because that one was very different in that it had like some of the same people.
Yeah.
Some of the same people even telling some of the same jokes, but in a different context. It was very different context. I felt like the audience was much more straight, traditional. And they were also a lot more like boisterous. They were laughing harder and louder than they were at the talkies.
I'll accept that. Yeah, I think that's true.
And they seemed to be, their humor seemed a little, maybe a little coarser. The audience were appreciating a coarser brand of humor than what was going on at the Mission Position or the talkies.
Right, like maybe it's a little bit more, people do a lot more like sex stuff or race stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And,
but every single person who got up there at that thing did something about race.
Well, actually, I think that was the theme of that particular show.
Oh, was
it? Back and looked. Yeah,
oh, okay.
The Hand to Mouth usually has a theme. I did one that was music, and I told this Jandek story.
Mm.
And that one last night was stereotypes, and I totally forgot that that's what it was until it kind of looked.
Oh, the one that we went to?
Yeah, so that makes sense that would be part of it.
Oh, okay.
And, Kasim. Did you watch Kasim's set? Black dude with a suit.
Yeah. He was very funny, but he was also
a monster.
He's very aggressive.
He's very aggressive.
And but off stage, he was just so mild mannered and friendly.
Yeah, he's
he
really
takes on a persona
of
that sort of a. It's not.
It's aggressive.
Yeah, I think that he's trying to be provocative. He's very provocative.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and Olympia seems like it's got an open mic scene, maybe.
I didn't know about it till I went to your thing.
Right, yeah. That girl,
which
Phoebe
is great. I'd like to see some more of it.
Yeah, I think just there was enough people. Well, let's say San Francisco is a bigger town. There's more people around, so we just have like a lot of comics. We have a lot of opportunities for people to get up and do that stuff. I did feel like when you got kind of late to that show, Northern, I felt a little bit of pushback on some things I was talking about from people, and I sort of thought about it in retrospect. I'm like, yeah, I mean, people don't think of Olympia as having a sense of humor, even though a lot of people I know are very funny that are from there. It just has a little bit of a serious workshop-y kind of vibe to it. That's what the reputation that precedes it is. And, yeah, I thought that was... But you weren't around for that part, but I felt a little bit of a pushback. But by the end, I think it worked out well. And it's not necessarily about, like, political correctness or anything specifically, but maybe more of a sense that everyone sort of did not understand the format of the comedy show and felt like, oh, I'm going to chime in with my opinion while this is happening.
Oh, uh-huh.
It's like, well, that in this context, that's heckling. I understand why that might be your impulse.
Yeah.
It's like, well, hey, equal time.
Uh-huh.
But that's not the format of the show.
But don't you think heckling serves a place? I'm surprised how little heckling there was at both all the three shows I went to.
I'm not...
Comedy shows.
Yes. There are some people that are very good at handling crowd work and heckling. And I'm not one of those people, but someone like Kasim, for example, is very good at doing this.
I think Traeger is awesome at handling hecklers.
Yeah.
He's really good.
I haven't actually seen him do it.
We played a show together in New York. I think it was the summer of 2000.
Oh, yeah, and back when he was doing stand-up then?
No, he was just doing music. He was just playing music. Yeah. And Adam Green, who's from... Moldy Peaches. Was in the crowd, and this is before Moldy Peaches had gotten any sort of...
I'm super late.
any kind of fame or anything. And he was just itching. He was just... It was like he couldn't stand the fact that someone else was on stage and playing music, because he wanted to be on stage playing music. So he was just like heckling Jason, and Jason handled it so well that people... And I don't think Adam even understood that he was being made a fool of, because he was so focused on give me the guitar and let me play my song, you know, and it was, everyone was laughing their head off, you know. It was so well done. But at the end, it was so well done, but it was done in such a way that it wasn't like he was really making fun of Adam, and in the end they were like friends, you know. They embraced, like,
it never got personal enough.
He got personal enough that they became good friends. I mean, he turned it around.
Jason,
he's able to turn it around so that it's not about heckling. It's about, oh, we're just, you know, he doesn't take it as an offensive thing. He just rolls with it. He just goes with it. It's great.
Yeah. No, like, I wish I could get to a point like that. I've not gotten there. And I do think it's interesting when you say that, because, yes, of course, now, like, Adam Green is a musician, and that's what I think is happening a lot of times with hecklers. It's like, they're secretly like, I think I'm better than this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it comes out in a venue that is not the right venue for that to happen. And because you're not coming on as equals, it's not like one comic then another comic on stage after another.
Right.
You know, but it's interesting because I feel like there's part of me that's just like, why don't we just encourage that person to become a performer?
Yeah.
That heckler should just... That's sort of the philosophy I think I would go with. It's just, yeah, just, hey, don't do that. Just sign up your name on the list.
Yeah.
Go up.
Go for it.
And then you'll see how you handle it. I did that one time to a heckler. A guy was heckling me, and I kind of just said, all right, your next comic's coming to stage right now. Please give it for Jeff, everyone. And then just handed him the mic. Yeah. And people were, I just gave him a noose to hang himself with. So it's pretty mean. On my part, and I was.
But what if you got up there? What if you got up there and
killed it?
Yeah.
Then I would have been handed my own ass.
No, it would have been great, because you'd be like, "Hey, that wouldn't have happened if you hadn't let him do that."
Whatever level of inebriation he was at, and just the things that were kind of his mouth, I was like, "This guy is gonna just hang himself."
Oh yeah.
If I hand him the mic, and I felt like an asshole doing it, I felt a little bit mean. I'm like, "Here, I'm just gonna like let you be the one to take this." And I don't know, I didn't even think about that till just now. Like, that's the last time I dealt with a heckler. That's what I ended up doing. And then I talked to other comics who are like, never give them the mic. Never give them the mic. You're relinquishing control. And it's, yeah, there's something very competitive or inherently a little like control freaky about doing it. I feel like a lot of my control freak side has emerged more doing this than being in bands. Because you're not, it's not as collaborative of a thing.
Well, is there someone else at at the show that is taking.
Yeah.
So you're not relying.
He's hosting.
On you.
He's not relying on me, but it does get a little bit hectic. And
right.
Like,
but you don't need to be there for it to start.
It can start without me, but I think he'll be a little bit resentful.
Well, what time does it start? Eight?
It probably won't start at 8. Usually 8:15, 8:10.
Oh, okay. Well,
so I think I'm okay.
We're almost there.
Yeah. No,
I mean, I can just get out anywhere.
Well, I don't want to dump you on the freeway.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, when
I'll go up to Bellis and then cut across, and you'll
wherever.
Sure yeah.
I mean, anywhere that's on the bus line, I'm sure. Yeah.
What are some things you're excited about project-wise, like K stuff?
Oh yeah. Well, you know, we did this new album with the Neo Boys. That's been a lot of fun working with this band. This is a band that was around from '78 to '83. In Portland, Oregon, all-female punk band, and I've always really enjoyed their music, and there's so much of their music that was never released that we have been working with the band to uncover all the tapes and put it in a format that feels right.
They still live in Portland, and you...
Most of them, yeah.
And you
well, half of them.
Enough that you could like work on the project.
Yeah.
And they're like still they're not it's not one of those bands that broke up and now they're like, oh,
no,
someone's
they all,
interested.
They're all friends, they're all buddies and
yeah.
It's great. They're really fun to work with.
Sometimes those things can go real weird. Like
Well, I'm not saying that this didn't.
Oh, okay.
But that's just the nature of we're working with something that's over 30 years ago and
yeah.
And everyone's got but it's been fun. You know, and they've just been great to work with because they still have a really clear vision of what their music is and what it means to them, so they can focus on it. It's really cool.
So back in the day they only had a couple singles.
They had a single and a 12-inch EP.
Uh-huh.
And then this is a double album.
And you got a hold of those. And
yeah, and this is a double album that has a whole bunch of other stuff on there.
Just archivally going through everything.
Yeah, and some live stuff, some demos, you know.
Yeah.
But some studio recordings that were never released. So.
That's great.
Yeah.
That guy who I introduced you to yesterday, Peter, he works on a lot of the reissues that Superior Viaduct does. And they're doing kind of similar types of things, like just finding an early 80s band, digging through practice tapes, digging through demos, putting it all into vinyl.
Uh-huh.
It's like, I think reissues seem to be a bigger thing right now. I'm more interested in reissues lately than new bands in terms of just what I see when I go record shopping.
Oh, uh-huh.
And compilations and stuff that, a lot of the stuff Mississippi was doing, those compilations.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, I always think that now is the most exciting time that music has.
Mm-hmm.
Right now is exciting. So there's always music going on right now that's worth listening to. And we work with mostly, we don't do a lot of reissues, but we're working mostly with current artists, and that's the exciting part. And I don't think we're going to do any other reissues because it's just there's just so much good music going on right now that we want to share with the world. So
yeah, well, I wasn't trying to say that there's no good bands. I've noticed a lot of reissue things happening.
Uh-huh.
Who are the new bands that you're excited about
The new Lake album just came out 2 weeks ago, and this is our third album we worked with them, and fourth album. They have so many, and they've put out, they're very prolific, so they have another album they put out on their own, same time we put out their album.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ashley Erickson, who's one of the singers,
record,
we have a solo album by her that came out like a month before the Lake album.
Oh, that's when I was in town. She was doing her record release show, so I did not go to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the same
night. That's right.
I've met her, though. I think I've met her. Yeah, she toured with Phil or something.
Yep, she plays with Mount Airy.
Yeah.
And so that's fun. Kendall Winter is another artist from Olympia she's originally from Arkansas, but she moved to Olympia like 8 years ago, 10 years ago.
Kendall Winter.
Yeah, and so this is our third album we've done with her. And she's just a real trooper. I mean, she's just on tour all the time. She's always doing music. She's a banjo player. She's she's sponsored by a banjo company.
Oh.
She has her own, they made a banjo for her, and she's, so she's pretty exciting music.
You ever play banjo?
I never have, no.
I like the just that you can just strum it and it sounds good.
Yeah.
Just do like a just straight across. I don't know the tuning, but you usually can noodle around on it. What was your first instrument? Was it guitar?
It was ukulele. When
okay.
I was in fifth grade, our whole class took up the ukulele. And then I, in junior high, I was a clarinet player.
Clarinet?
Yep. Okay.
Do you have any of that skill set still?
Well, I play the melodica, which is nothing like the clarinet or the ukulele, but it is a wind instrument that you, it's like a keyboard instrument that you blow into, so, yeah.
Clarinet, were you doing, like, band, like
school
band?
Yeah, I was in school band, yeah, but...
And then when did the punk part...
Well, I started playing guitar when I was, like, 13, working with my brother. My brother played guitar, and he and his friends showed me how to play a few chords and things. And right about that time is when I started getting interested in punk music, like in 76. I started in reading about punk rock.
Like, you get, like, an NME or something? Or?
No. No, there was no way for me to get an NME.
So, where were you reading about punk rock?
In, like, the back of Rolling Stone magazine.
Oh, okay. There'd be, like, a little...
There might be something in the random
notes. What's
going
on in England?
A little thing about the Ramones, or Blondie,
really?
Or something about the Sex Pistols. I remember reading about the Sex Pistols in, like, November of 1976
Whoa.
In Rolling Stone and being like, this sounds interesting.
But you were reading Rolling Stone for, like, their coverage of...
Well,
like,
my brother
Saturn
got it. He was a
Beatles,
subscriber, so
yeah.
I just read it all the time. I just read it. It
yeah.
just was... And so, but I would pick out these little clues. You know, there was a little article about the Ramones, a little article about Blondie. And then Cream Magazine
yeah,
really
Cream.
Picked up the punk thing and ran with it. And so over the next couple... So I recognized that Rolling Stone was completely square, you know?
Yeah.
They were just like... They obviously weren't getting it. And Cream was like, they were making fun of it, but they were also sort of championing it.
Right.
And so that was a great, because the difference is that Rolling Stone was only writing about the corporate bands, like Sex Pistols or Ramones, whereas Cream was writing about punk as a local phenomenon. And they would do an issue that was dedicated to the San Francisco punk scene, or the LA punk scene,
right.
or the New York punk scene. So they were taking a regional approach to it, which was really exciting.
Yeah.
And which was what punk was all about. It was about these regional scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really cool.
That's interesting. I was thinking about how regionalism seems to not matter as much in the sense of, like, people just putting tracks on SoundCloud, whatever, just getting everything everywhere. This sort of the blog type of promotion that bands do now, but regionalism is still very important. Obviously, as you saw this trip, you know, like, there's everyone, you run into someone, they're like, oh, why didn't you play here? You should have played here. Like, there's still, like, these little nooks of information, data nooks, or just, like, connection nooks that are super regional.
Yeah.
That you need to find, and you're really good at finding those things. The
yeah.
grassroots people.
Well, it interests me. And, you know, I'm interested in all different kinds of music. A few years ago, well, I guess it was like 4 or 5 years ago, I was doing a little trip around the Midwest, and I just went to Gary, Indiana, just on my way. I actually was going to, I can't remember where I was playing, somewhere in like DeKalb or Rockford or somewhere on the other side of Chicago. But first I just thought, I'm just going to go to Gary, see what it's all about.
Like on this
Indiana.
Is a solo tour?
Yeah, I was just driving. I had a car.
Solo drive, yeah.
Yeah, so I just drove into Gary, and I just was like, because I'd never really been there before, and it's so bombed out, you know, so much. It's so much beyond Detroit in terms of
really?
Just,
yeah.
in just devastation, and
sorry.
And
about
I went
this,
to like, yeah. I went to like, there was this little hip hop record store place, and I went in there, and they had just like, of course they didn't have any records. I mean, they had records, but they were all like major labels, because at that point. Mm-hmm. Which was whenever that was, the late 00s. Nobody put out records except major labels.
Vinyl, you mean? Or
yeah,
just,
vinyl.
Yeah. yeah. So
there
CDs.
Were tons of CD,
yeah.
mix, local mixtapes. They called them mixtapes, but they were CDs. And local people doing CDs. But nobody local was doing records at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And but the thing is, it was all Gary.
Mm-hmm.
There was no Chicago stuff at all.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, what, 40 miles from Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
50 miles from Chicago? And it had nothing to do with Chicago at all.
Wow, just a Gary specific hip hop scene that was probably all centered around that shop.
Probably, yeah. And it was completely local. You know,
that might have been CDR era. Mid-2000s was CDR era.
Right.
And that was a big thing in the noise community. CDRs were a big thing in the noise community. I mean, because that's kind of were there the whole time. But now I don't see people making CDRs. It's like...
It's pretty rare. Now, I think it's interesting that people have creative ways. They'll do like a silkscreen poster with a download code, and they'll sell that at a show or whatever.
I have these friends that were screen printing download codes onto t-shirts. I don't know how they did it on the tag. They must have done it on the tag, because you couldn't switch up. He explained to me this whole process he wanted to do. I think it was for religious girls, where he was going to just print all the download codes and then just tape them off for the screens untape and retape them. That's for each pull.
Yeah.
But I'm like, that's... Your design has to be changed all the time. I don't know.
Sounds elaborate.
It's really elaborate, yeah. You don't want to be yanking tape off of a screen as you're printing. But anyway. Yeah, there's... We were talking about the format kind of wars thing from the late 80s, right? When you had you were running a label and you had to do a cassette, an LP, and a CD in 88, 89?
Yeah, in the 80s when you're dealing with these distributors and they're like, well, in order to get into these stores, you have to have a barcode and you have to do all three formats and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, but those distributors aren't going to carry our shit anyway. We could follow all the rules and they might take 10 copies.
So
it's like, why I follow their shitty rules? And so we just like, fuck it, let's just put out 45s. And we did like a couple albums, but we really weren't worrying about it. We would do like vinyl only, and it was just like, let's just wait till this thing settles down a little bit.
Was all the Go Team stuff the 45s?
We did 45s and some cassettes.
And, so mail order must have been the strong thing for you.
Oh, yeah, always been mail order. Like, that's from the word go, because mail order is really important. I mean, when we were doing, the label, it was just cassettes, and that's all we really had is mail order, because stores weren't interested. Even though cassette had become the dominant format by the mid-80s, underground cassettes were still completely meaningless. You know, the way CDs are dead now, and stores don't want CDs, but they will buy vinyl.
Yeah.
It was kind of like it was with cassettes. People would be like, we'll take the album, but we don't want cassettes. Although now cassettes have this sort of...
Nostalgic.
This revival. It's interesting. It's fun.
Yeah.
But, so anyway, doing this... These cassette-only releases, people did not want them, because those were... To most stores, they saw that as a vanity publishing kind of thing.
Yeah, whereas it didn't seem like...
It wasn't like an independent label. It was just a vanity publishing. So the stores didn't carry them... So, our only options were selling them at shows or mail order.
And at that time, who was the organization? It was you and one other person.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was really pretty loose in the early few years. Each project was different. So, like, the first thing I did was the Supreme Cool Beings cassette, and that was just something I did on my own. And then we did these compilations, one called Dangers of Their Business. And that I did with this guy, Rich Jensen. He organized that with me. And our first rock compilation was called Let's Together. And that I worked with Brett Lunsford. He really put that together.
And you weren't playing music in a band at the time?
Well, I was playing music in a duo with this woman named Stella.
Okay. Is that Stella?
Stella Mars.
Yeah. And then
she moved away, and I started playing in what became Beat Happening, but at that time it was just called Laura, Heather, and Calvin.
Stupid way. dinner with her family.
To explain what happened, I'm sitting on the steps of City Hall with Thorsten and Jamie, the couple that got married, that I married. I married you guys. You guys, I married you. And I was doing an interview with Calvin in my car and on my phone, and my phone ran out of memory. So just the end of it is cut off, so I don't have like an ending with Calvin. So I thought actually it'd be cool to bring you guys. We're in City Hall just like turning in your marriage certificate. And I was like, oh, I should just ask you guys why you asked Calvin to sing at your wedding.
Yeah, so a couple years ago, Jamie, went up to Seattle to visit a friend of mine who was at the wedding. And she...
Oh, yeah, I think I met her.
Angelica. Yeah. And she ended up getting the flu, so I couldn't stay with her, but I still had the ticket, so I just went up and got myself a hotel, and I looked in the weekly paper, and there was a K Records band called The Curious Mystery playing down the street, and I knew I liked them. I'm like, awesome, I'll just walk up the street and go see them. And the show was very, like, sparsely populated. There's hardly anyone there, and I'm watching the show, and I see a very familiar dance happening, and I was like, oh my God, that's Calvin. He's here.
Did he have the headphones on?
No headphones. Oh. He was just dancing. He had a moose hat on. Like, he had a really cute winter hat with, like, moose horns on it and a plaid jacket. And I introduced myself and just said I was a big fan and asked if I could get my picture taken with him. And so I got this really cute picture taken where he's got his arm around me and he's, like, resting his head on my shoulder with his eyes closed. So fast forward to last year when I put my OkCupid profile up, and I thought I was going through pictures to put up there, and I was like, oh, maybe I'll put this picture of me and Calvin up, because if somebody knows who that is, like, well, I know we'll get along.
Odds are, yeah.
And Thor messaged me, and that was like his comment was about that photo out of all the photos I had up, and
Calvin Johnson and Moose Hat.
He made some funny comment that he later said he was kind of embarrassed about. It was like,
hey girl, that's some serious indie cred
you got.
That did not get brought up in the toast.
And so that was the basis of our courtship. And so then when we were planning our wedding, I thought about that again, and I said, wouldn't that be funny if Calvin played at our wedding? I said, let me just give this a shot. I don't have his contact information. I'll just send a message to info@krecords.com, and I attach the picture and explain the story. And I didn't hear for about 6 weeks. I kind of forgot about it. I thought, oh, that just went into the void, and it's not going to happen, no big deal. I didn't have high expectations. And then 2 months later, Calvin responds, and he says, hi, Jamie, this is Calvin. First of all, congratulations on your engagement, and it's very likely I can play your wedding. And we were totally psyched. And then it all worked out from there.
And then how did you guys decide what requests you wanted, what songs you requested for him to play?
Because I can just play them on the thing.
Yeah, we've been...
There was two tracks from the Hive. There was only three requests we made. We just wanted to give him the freedom to play what he wanted. So there was Gettin' and A Woman Named Trudy and Love Will Come Back Again, which is just one we had found on Spotify we'd been listening to a lot. And we just kind of wanted him to just do his own thing and be comfortable and have fun himself, which he seemed to have.
I'll just play Get In, because that's like one of my favorites.
We liked the whole idea that our wedding wasn't traditional, and that song seemed fitting and funny, so.
Yeah. Did your parents like it?
Yeah.
Did they like him?
Yeah, they did.
That's good. I was a little bit worried about they were going to be, I don't know if some of these jokes will go over, but then, your dad talking about diarrhea, it's like, all right, I could have totally made that other joke.
I know, it would have been fine. I know.
But,
I know,
yeah. Thorsten, Jamie, congratulations.
Thank you.
And enjoy your honeymoon in Hawaii, and this will hopefully be uploaded soon, and here's the song you requested.
Thank you.
Fabulous, thanks.
Sweet.
By Hive Dwellers.
Thank you.
Thank
thanks,
you.
Calvin.
Screwball, dirty foot, I'm morally bankrupt, breathless mind, speed queen, go to ball, hothead, liar, burnout, communist sympathizer. While you're freaking about the guest list or the VIP, I'm swinging with my unrepentant homebody, glunking something toxic in the back alley. Hey, recovering riot girl, get in, get in, get in, get in, get in. Queer bait, illiterate, neutered, stoner, sweaty, disruptive, spineless, poser, dull as a post, antisocial, perv, lard ass, oppressive odor, chief leg, hopeless. Walking abortion, coward, horse, alcoholic, loner, consumptive, snotty, flat as a board, needle freak, loser, four-eyed, whore. Got a pigeon-toed clubhouse in my backyard, only the emotionally crippled allowed. You're looking for ugly ducklings? We're well endowed. Good at math? You have to ask. Get in. Biker chick, lemming, panic attacks. Visible scars on arms or neck. Compulsive, pinko, birth defect. Tubby, urine stained, neurotic, cross-eyed, homeless. Looking for a fat lip, negroid, listless, porn addict, hysterical, abusive, turkey neck, autistic, topless, sociopath, lesbo, kleptomaniac, worthless, wear no underpants, missing teeth, shoeless, smoker's hack. Got a short skirt? Well, I got one too. Now I bend over low and show you my bird. Getting all wiggly and feeling backwoods. Befriending old Wobbly, then it's understood. I picked a bad day to quit sniffing glue. Free things are cool. Get in. Get in. Get in. Get in. First, you've been on a case with 95% of the human race. We got our own gang, you can join it too. Just follow outside the line. Get in, get in, get in, get in, get in. So don't care about players and nothing. Do you have trouble chewing gum and walking? High school dropout or half-assed fashion victim? Sign on the dotted line. Get in. Utterly undependable, boring, distraught, no wave, greaser, facial birthmark, black bra, white t-shirt, lost info. Full of shit, got caught. I got internal bleeding and bad breath, an obsessive misfit with a sunken chest. Would you sell your soul for unrequited love? Then do what Jesus does. Get in, get in, get in, get in, get in. Retard, nerd, insane, skinhead, bulldog, hopelessly tame, social leper, sex on the brain.